It's the Listener Mail Edition. Why now is the time for the Patriots to move Jimmy Garoppolo, what the Panthers and Cardinals have to do to get back into contention, breaking down the Patriots' interior O-line, plus an angry lesson for Andy on Guns N' Roses, and Belichick's baffling Super Bowl wardrobe choice, all that and even more on the MMQB 10 Things podcast.
The MMQB presents the MMQB 10 Things podcast, powered by digital media. Find your voice. And now, your hosts, Andy Benoit and Gary Gramling.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB 10 Things podcast. I am Gary Gramling. I am here with Andy Benoit. And we're doing something a little special for our first sort of full-fledged off-season show. It's all mailbag.
All mailbag. And we'll have stuff. I mean, this is the week to do this. We're just in any football topic is in play this week because it's about the one, maybe 2 weeks of true downtime we get until we get into combine mode, then free agency, then draft, and people know how that goes. So this is truly off season for a week or two here.
Yeah, it's also kind of like, you know, we're moving the mailbag back from Thursday to Monday since Thursday show is kind of going on hiatus for a little while. I mean, it wasn't that much different than our Monday show, but since there are no games, we're not doing a look ahead, and Thursday mailbag moves to Monday mailbag, back where it belongs, and this is almost like a celebration of it.
All right, this Monday mailbag, this has been a big deal to you, moving the mailbag back to Monday. I don't think much about it. The Thursday show is going to be back in like 3 weeks. I don't find the ceremony of it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we'll do a couple Thursday shows during the off season, especially around free agency and draft, but people love the mailbag, and people write in, and they want to know if their questions got answered, and you know, you check, if you're sitting there on Thursday hitting refresh on your feed, it's not going to show now. You got to do Monday.
Let's get right to it then.
We're going to start with Jürgen from Austria. I'd like to ask, what is your take on Jimmy Garoppolo? What would you give up for Jimmy G? Some people throwing out there two first rounders. Brown should give the 1 and the 12 of the upcoming draft. It's an interesting case. And right now, the first question is, do the Patriots want to trade him?
Well, first, let me back up. Jürgen, it's a good question. I haven't heard anyone saying the Browns will give up the number 1 and the number 12. You're not doing that. That's two high first rounders in the same draft. Look, this stuff depends on who you are and what team you are. I think New England would be willing to trade him, and I would give up a first round pick for him if I believed in him. Evaluations of Garoppolo are going to change from team to team, and so is each team's quarterback need. So it's all relative to your circumstances. The teams that are getting thrown, we could go through the teams that people have discussed. I think the Browns would be wise to trade their 12th pick and a fourth rounder if New England would take that. I'd do that if I'm Cleveland. Houston's a team needing a QB, but they probably aren't going to be able to swing that with their cap situation on those guys. We could go team to team if you want. Garoppolo, doesn't it feel, Gary, like this season's going to be the Garoppolo watch offseason?
It is. You know, Cleveland, Chicago, and San Francisco are the three teams that seem to pop up the most here, and they all make sense. I mean, you have a full rebuild going on in Cleveland and now in San Francisco, and Chicago, you know, if they're moving on from Cutler, even if they keep Cutler for another year, they're not going to he's not a long-term solution there. And people love making that Ryan Pace, Jimmy Garoppolo, Eastern Illinois University connection there.
The people know about it. The people, I mean, not every, let's be honest. Not, first of all, not casual fans don't know Ryan Pace, Bears general manager. And second of all, the casual fans plus don't know where he's from in college. I didn't know where he's from in college. And fraternity, I heard.
Oh, were they really?
Yes. Yeah,
is that true?
Chi. The Sigma Chi's wanted me to do something and interview Ryan Pace years ago, him and Drew Brees. And, so I know what fraternity he's from, but I never looked up the college. So I figure if I don't know the college, and I've had assignments to look into it, and I didn't find it or didn't care to find it, then I don't think a lot of people are pumping the what was it, Eastern Illinois?
Eastern Illinois. I'm saying media people love pumping up that connection. Emily Kaplan did a Emily Kaplan from the Albert Breer podcast. She did a piece on it, the EIU connection, the NFL. There's a weird number of people, Mike Shanahan, Tony Romo, a couple other guys, Brad Childress, Sean Payton. Yeah, weird pipeline coming out of Eastern Illinois to the NFL. But yeah, as far as Garoppolo goes, well, I'll start with this, and then we'll touch on the teams a little bit, the other two teams I mentioned. But if you're the Patriots, this is the last year of Garoppolo's rookie deal, 2017. Tom Brady is obviously going to be your starting quarterback. You figure for at least two more years. I think that's fair to say. You know, if there's some horrible, I don't know, deterioration of his physical skills next season, maybe you say, well, Brady in 2018, and then we'll see. But obviously he's locked in for 2017. I think he's pretty much locked in for 2018, despite his age, since he seems to be Benjamin Buttoning for the most part. But as far as Garoppolo goes, if you want to keep him after 2017, I mean, do you franchise him? Because you got to pay Dante Hightower. You got to pay Malcolm Butler.
Right.
You know, we've talked about Brady's contract, but Brady's contract isn't like a rookie contract. This isn't a Dak Prescott, Tony Romo thing. You'd be devoting, you know, close to $40 million to your quarterbacks if you franchise Garoppolo. Of course, they could also franchise and trade him after next season.
So the decision starts with Tom Brady, and do they feel he can play beyond 2017? Now, let's say they don't know at this point if he can do that. They want to kick that can down the road. Well, then we get into 2018 or after the 2017 season, which is when they'd make their decision. And the complicating factor is if the Patriots, you can't franchise tag Garoppolo and have Brady under contract, because now you're tying up, by that point, the QB franchise tag will probably be about $27-28 million.
Yeah.
You'd be tying up, Brady's cap number is $22 million that year. So there's $50 million in cap space at one position, and a position where only one of the two guys can actually play on the field. So they're not going to do that. It'll be a Brady or Garoppolo thing. But the complicating factor is if they decide we want to do Garoppolo, we're going to franchise him and move on from Brady. Brady would cost them $14 million of dead cap space in 2018. So they're off by a year here. It's too bad for them, but they need Garoppolo to have 2 years left on his deal, because then Brady in 2019, they could get rid of him for $7 million if they wanted. But the numbers don't add up. It's going to have to be a Brady or Garoppolo decision. And they're going to have to take a flying leap somewhere and make a decision on Brady. I would think with Brady, and I know the Patriot way, and you get rid of guys a year early, there's zero indication that he's washing up. I mean, he's better now than he was 10 years ago. So I would think in that case, you err on the side of keeping Brady. You're going to roll the dice with the 40-something-year-old QB. Keep in mind, Garoppolo's a roll of the dice himself, too. Mm-hmm. He hasn't had to play over a month in the NFL season. They've only seen him in practice and behind the scenes.
Yeah. Yeah, and look, I mean, their body language suggests that they love him and they love to keep him on as the heir apparent to Brady. We've seen him. The Cardinals win, it was a win, and that's a very impressive road win to open last season, but he wasn't particularly, you know, a guy you'd watch in that game and say, like, whoa, yeah, this guy's a budding star. I mean, he kind of took advantage of two blown coverages, which, hey, that's nice. You should take advantage of blown coverages. But, you know, it wasn't like he carved up the Cardinals. He did carve up the Dolphins. That was the second game. And of course, he got hurt in that game. So only he played a little more than half the game there. But,
yeah. And they have to trade him. They have to, because they can't retain, but we just went over, they can't retain both Brady and Garoppolo. So then the next step is, what do you do? You're not going to let a potential starting QB, whether you feel he's that or not, the rest of the league does, and so that's his value. You're not going to let him just walk away. That's not how New England does things. It would be totally counter to their approach to keep Garoppolo on the roster this season, because it's going to be hard to do that again in 2018 with Garoppolo and Brady. So they're at decision time now. Do you get something for Garoppolo now? Because now's the chance. Otherwise, he walks for free.
Well, the other reason that now's the chance, the market is totally in their favor. I don't know if there's ever been a time where there were so many teams in desperate need of a quarterback and so few options available out there. I mean, really, you know, who's your top free agent? Mike Glennon, maybe if Tyrod Taylor shakes loose in Buffalo. Otherwise, you know, these guys in the draft. And look, you know, you can point to Dak Prescott and say, like, look at what the Cowboys found in the fourth round. But these are developmental guys, and they're all lottery tickets. And you can take one and hope he's Dak Prescott, but more likely, you're taking a guy who's 2 or 3 years away and might never pan out. But I guess my point would be, once you take one of those developmental guys, like if Cleveland ends up grabbing Mitch Trubisky or Deshaun Watson and whoever else, Kansas City does the same, or San Francisco or Chicago, they're kind of out of the market next year. You're not going to invest a first rounder and then next year give up another first rounder for another potential franchise quarterback, and if the Patriots decide to tag and then trade Garoppolo. So I feel like this is the time now where they would get the biggest haul. The only way that would change is if, like, Brady missed half of next season and Garoppolo went out and just, you know, lit the world on fire.
Right. I guess you could say Garoppolo is our insurance policy in case Brady is out and gone. That's an expensive insurance policy, though. And Brady is not a guy that misses time. He missed one season on a kind of a freak injury. He's not injury prone. He's not a vulnerable player. He doesn't take a ton of hits. So
it's a freak, and he knows how to take hits. And look, the rules, you know, there was a rule specifically put in place to avoid those sorts of hits. So, you know, he's probably not going anywhere. And I guess the other question or the other point I make with the Patriots is, obviously their bar is Super Bowl or no Super Bowl. And if Tom Brady misses time, is Jimmy Garoppolo going to win you a Super Bowl? I'd say at this point, probably not. He'd give you a better chance than Jacoby Brissett or some veteran that you'd bring in. But, I think the reward of trading Garoppolo right now would be much greater than the risk.
Yep, I agree with you completely.
There we go. We'll just have to wait and find out. But, yeah. That will be a recurring theme over the next couple weeks. I'm sure we'll be touching on that one again. Next question. Not all our answers will be that long because we have lots of questions to get to. This is coming from John Tyler via Twitter. What do you think of the Texans' coaching moves with Mike Vrabel getting the promotion and Bill O'Brien, of course, taking over play calling once again?
I like the Vrabel side of things. I don't know Mike Vrabel, but I hear really good things around the league about him. And the fact that they're keeping Crennel on, that eases everyone's transition. That's an ideal situation in how you want to do it. As far as O'Brien keeping the play calling, I don't know what went down with him and George Gotze during the season. I like Gotze. I think he's a good coach. I've been able to spend time with him. And I don't know what was behind that. And Bill O'Brien obviously is proven in that category, in that area. So I'm fine with that. That's one. Whenever coaches take over play call, it's hard to decide. What are we to decide? Like, is that the right or wrong thing? Like, we don't know what goes into those decisions.
Yeah.
And the same thing with Mike McCarthy and Tom Clements last year. That's just a day-to-day operations decision, and we're not privy to the day-to-day operations.
Let's see, next one's coming from James from Bakersfield via Talkback. What did Andy think of the two rookie Panthers quarterbacks this year? That would be Worley and of course James Bradberry, the second rounder. Worley was a third rounder. They combined to start 24 games. Will the Patriots defense rebound with the development of those two guys? And of course, you know, this was no Josh Norman this year, and that was a big question. How will the cornerbacks hold up? And of course, the Panthers end up having a million other things go wrong.
Well, they did. The Panthers, first of all, it all starts with their pass rush, regardless of who's at cornerback. If Carolina's pass rush isn't getting home, then their defensive scheme's not going to function well. When the pass rush got home, I thought the corners looked fine. I like Bradberry. I think there's a physicality to him at the top of routes. I thought he did a very good job, especially when he was near the sideline, of understanding route angles and when guys were breaking off a route, converting a hook, whatever it is that a route runner does. I think there's something there with Bradberry. Now, it's early, and he still has a ways to go. Daryl Worley is at this point a number two, and when Bradberry was out of the lineup, which was for quite a few weeks, that secondary got exposed, and Worley was part of that. But I'm fine with both of them. I think overall it wasn't a good season for this defense, and these corners were a part of that and a reason why. But I think overall there's still very much reason for optimism with what they've done there, and I think this plan of rebuilding with these young corners, I think it's going to ultimately pay off.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird. You know, we thought if the Panthers were going to slip, it was going to be all on the secondary, and the secondary certainly had their ups and downs. But, you know, even if they held on to Josh Norman this year, that was probably not a playoff team.
They didn't play well. And the position in the secondary that's of more concern for them would be safety. Kurt Coleman is excellent, and he's gotten – Kurt Coleman's one of those guys. We ought to put together a team, Gary, of just solid NFL guys who've gotten gradually better over the course of their career. Josh Norman would have been one of them too. Remember when Norman was early in his career, his first few seasons, he was benched and to the point where he didn't play at all. He went from starter to utter bench warmer because he was bad. He was probably the worst starting corner in the NFL for the first year or two that he was on the field. And he's improved, which Kurt Coleman's done the same thing there in Carolina. But the rest of the secondary, like the other safety position, they weren't comfortable with Trey Boston for whatever reason. I like Boston as a blitzer. I think they like him in their pass defense stuff. But he was in and out of the lineup. Michael Griffin's not the guy. Colin Jones, he's a free agent. They're not going to have him back, I would guess. So they need to find help at the safety position. And when you're in a zone scheme, safety is just as an important position as cornerback in a lot of ways because everyone's working together. You're not guarding individual players.
Yeah. God, I forgot Michael Griffin was on their roster.
They had two for a little bit. His snap counts went way down late in the season.
Yep. Yeah. Next one is coming from Calvin from Cincinnati. Move tight ends, linebacker, safety hybrids. Every few years, it seems like a new under-the-radar position suddenly receives a lot of attention for mismatch abilities, chess pieces, if you will. What positions or schematic roles do you think might become vital over the next couple of seasons?
That's a good question. I like that. That's an intellectual question. Let's stick to offense because he talked offense first there, and then maybe if we'll see if we can jump to defense. I don't know if this is going to be the right answer, but for the sake of continuing with the intellectual kind of conversation on football here, what if the fullback comes back?
Yeah.
And not necessarily, and maybe we're talking move tight end, which he already mentioned, Calvin already mentioned. But you look at the teams that played their fullbacks the most, and two of them were New England and Atlanta. And so if someone told you, hey, the teams that play their fullback the most, what kind of offense would they run? You would think they run I-form, power running, ball control, old-style offense. Neither of those teams did. And even though both of those fullbacks are old-school lead-blocking fullbacks. So what's happened is teams have figured out how to make that position not in and of itself an evolved dynamic position, but the way, when that fullback's on the field and what the defense has to do to respond, the defense has to put their run-defending personnel on the field if there's a fullback out there. Otherwise, you're going to get run over. So based on that, the other positions around the fullback can evolve because teams are finding more ways, offenses are finding more ways to attack base defenses with their other players, with their tight ends, with their wide receivers. And the thing we talked about, Patrick DeMarco for Atlanta and James Devlin in New England did this too. They just split them out wide and put them at wide receiver, and now everyone else is playing a different position and defenders are in a unique spot. And what do you do if DeMarco's out wide and Julio Jones is in the slot? How do you guard that if your corner is not a slot corner? There's all sorts of complicating factors that get presented when fullbacks are on the field, and I would think we're going to see more teams using fullbacks. The other team that had a good success was Kyle Juszczyk in Baltimore, and he's a little bit of a different – yeah, he's a different type of breed because he's more athletic than those other two guys.
Mm-hmm.
He's their third down back as well. But teams that had fullbacks this season, they were difficult offenses to match up against schematically. I would think we're going to see more fullbacks in the next few years.
Interesting. Yeah, how about I know it's generic to say linebackers on defense, but it seems like, you know, there are a couple years where it's sort of like the old stack and shed type guys. And I don't think the stack and shed type guys are coming back. But a guy like Dante Hightower, who has value as a run stopper, and then he has value as a pass rusher, even though he's not really he's not a great coverage guy. And maybe that becomes sort of a way you keep guys like that on the field.
Well, I think what makes Hightower work for New England is that they have safeties around him who are dimensional, multidimensional.
Yeah.
Patrick Chung, if you look at the Super Bowl, he lined up at linebacker a lot in that game, and we kind of thought he would. He can cover, and he can play the run. So it's these physical hybrid safeties, Landon Collins-type guys, and Collins is more of a pure, strong safety, but he can play in a lot of different ways like that. That's, I think, the position that's going to keep evolving on defense, and it has for a number of years. And now we're seeing Deion Buchanan's and Darren Lee's, these athletic, lighter linebackers. And I think Chung, you could argue, is a lot like Deion Buchanan. And when you have that, that's what makes Hightower work, because now you can use him in a very specific way. You don't have to ask Dante Hightower to cover, and you don't have to hide him in coverage, so you're able to call more coverages because you're not having to hide weaknesses. So the more versatility you have, the better you're going to be if you're well coached, because that's, you have more options. And the guys that give you versatility are those hybrid safeties. And more teams are playing with three safeties and two linebackers. It used to be three linebackers and two safeties. It's probably almost a 50-50 split now of teams using three safeties on their base downs.
Yeah. No, I got nothing else on defense. Can you think of anything else?
I don't know if there is anything else right now. The rest of it still have stayed pretty traditional, but the safeties are what's changing the most. And coaches were talking about that 6 or 7 years ago. I remember being in Indianapolis at the Combine and hearing it come up again and again and again. And it's been a slow evolution, but it's been a consistent one. And I don't think it's finished. I think it's only a little bit of the way through.
Yep. Andy, before we move on, I just wanted to mention, you know, it's the off season now, and that means you and I, we get to sleep a little bit more. We get to sleep like 8 hours, get a solid 8 hours in. How are you doing with your mattress?
I'm okay with my mattress. I down in Mobile at the Senior Bowl, the house we stayed at, though, had an unbelievable mattress, and I slept great there. So I can always use an upgrade, I suppose.
Well, I got one for you. Casper. Casper is a sleep brand that created one perfect mattress sold directly to customers that eliminates the commission-driven inflated prices. That's the middleman. Get rid of the middleman. Get it straight from Casper. This is the thing, though. Award-winning sleep service developed in-house. It has a sleek design, but this is what is blowing my mind. It comes in this, they call it the small, how do they do that size box? And if you've ever bought a mattress or had a mattress delivered, you need a truck or you need a pickup truck or you need a vehicle big enough to tie it onto your roof or whatever. This comes in this box. It fits into the trunk of my wife's Honda Civic. There's dudes who, like, you can put it on the back of a bike and ride around with it because it's this amazing, I wish I knew science better, but it's this amazing technology that basically you can scrunch it into the box and you take it out and you unpack the thing and you get a full-fledged mattress that is not only easy to maneuver to whichever room in the house you're going to put it into, but you know, it gives you a great sleep. It's got excellent support.
And it gets big right out of the box. You'd almost think like you'd have to like water it and give it sunlight for the first 3 weeks in order for it to be the size of mattress you need. But I assume it gets very big right on time, right as you get it out
of
the
box.
It does. Maybe within the same day or something.
It is mind-blowing. I can't wrap my head around this. You know, Casper, obsessively engineered mattress at a shockingly fair price. You're going to combine the supportive memory foam to create an award-winning sleep service, just the right sink and just the right bounce for you. They have over 20,000 reviews and an average of 4.8 stars. That is not only the Casper site, but also Amazon and Google reviews. So, you know, that's legit at this point because that's where most people are getting their stuff. Free shipping and returns to the U.S. and Canada. And listen, try Casper for 100 nights risk-free in your home. If you don't love it, they will come and pick it up. So you don't even have to worry about repacking the thing. They'll come and pick it up and refund you everything. And by the way, this is all designed, developed, and assembled in the USA. So we have an offer for you. Get $50 toward purchase of any Casper mattress. Go to casper.com/MMQB and use the promo code MMQB. Again, that is $50 off toward any mattress purchase. casper.com/MMQB, promo code MMQB. glad to have those guys aboard. I'm telling you, go Google it right now. We'll wait. We'll wait 4 okay. seconds here. Or you can just press pause on your show. But yeah, Google it right now and check out the box it comes in. It is mind-bending. This is science fiction type of stuff.
This is the MMQB 10 Things Podcast.
Check out Open Floor with Andrew Sharp and Ben Golliver.
As recently as a month ago, really. Like, none of this seemed real. This entire Wizard season is a bonus for me. And
It was a loss. It was a loss. I mean, you're really giving your Wizards a lot of moral victories here in blue ribbons.
I hate you, all right? Just let me have this. Let me have this.
Listen and subscribe to new episodes every Tuesday and Friday of Open Floor.
We'll get back to the football right now. Next question is coming via Twitter. This is Mr. Quindazzi. Last six games, the Patriots' run game was getting blown up by defensive line penetration. How come?
I didn't necessarily see it that way. I'm not saying the question's wrong. The Patriots are not a dynamic running team. They run to stay on schedule to keep things balanced. Mm-hmm. They ran 25 times in the Super Bowl. I don't think people would have guessed that. It didn't feel that way, and it's probably because they had, 74 other snaps? But they ran the ball, and they were able to stay on balance here and there. That's their style of play. So I don't know why they get – if they're giving up penetration. I haven't thought it was a big issue. They're a gap scheme too. So the teams that give up penetration are zone teams where everyone's blocking in unison and they're going in one direction and someone breaks through that line and now you lose the unison of the blocking. With gap scheme stuff, it's more about man-on-man blocking. So you tend to get stalemated more than penetrated. And I don't know if that was ever a big issue with New England. Overall, I think their offense and their running game was just fine.
Yeah. Yeah, what do you think of their interior line play? Because it was something of a question mark, mostly because it's young guys. They had a rookie, Joe Thuney. They had David Andrews, undrafted guy, second year at center. And then Shaq Mason, who's been sort of he came out of Georgia Tech's triple option as sort of a question mark a couple years ago, and he's come on kind of nicely at the other guard spot.
Yeah, I think he's the most intriguing of those three guys for sure, because he's the most athletic. And if you're a man-blocking team, that means you use a lot of pull blockers. And so the athletic guard is going to be valuable to you as the pull blocker. Andrews, to me, is fine. He can get exposed at times in pass protection. The biggest example of that was when Houston got Whitney Mercilus matched on him one-on-one in a pass rush in the divisional round. Mercilus ate his lunch a few times. Joe Tooney's jury's still out on him. I thought he had a nice, solid rookie season. New England isn't a team that's built to rely heavily on its offensive line. You have to remember that. They've got a pricey left tackle, an expensive one in Nate Solder, who's really an average left tackle when you break it all down. And then they've got a bunch of middle-round draft picks. So that tells you they're not the Dallas Cowboys. They take a different approach and a different view of the offensive line. And the reason why is if you look at the Cowboys, they're built on their running game. We just said New England's built on getting balance from the running game. They're not reliant on it. They just use it to round out the offense. Mm-hmm. And then New England's built on getting the ball out quickly. So they're not asking their guys to protect Tom Brady for 3 seconds. They're saying get it done for 1.5 to 2 seconds. So they don't need to have a big dynamic offensive line there. And that's an advantage too, because offensive linemen are expensive. And if you can find a way to, if you can find a way to not have to pay for that, then you've got more options to pay for your defense. And then athletic defenders are expensive. And I think you get more out of those guys.
Yep. Next question here. This is Mike from DC via TalkBack here. This is going to get a little bit hot takey here, but
all right.
Cowboys, Raiders, Dolphins, Giants, Titans all improved by 4+ wins this season. Other teams, Falcons and Buccaneers, greatly exceeded expectations, while others, parentheses, Panthers and Cardinals, greatly underperformed. Which surprise teams do you think took lasting steps forward or backwards?
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah.
Let's go. All right. Let's trust that he's got all the teams covered. Say the teams again that he identified as big steps forward.
Well, let's start with Cowboys and coming into the year. I thought the Cowboys, you know, when we were looking at Tony Romo being their quarterback, this was last summer, I thought they would benefit from the schedule greatly, and that's why I thought they'd win the NFC East But they obviously, I mean, they would have, you know, they would have won that division no matter what the schedule was.
And I think we can all agree they have taken a lasting step forward. Now, Dak Prescott, I think the jury's a little more out on him than people realize. But with that offensive line the way it is, it might not matter. Prescott has such good surroundings, and he's taken advantage of him, and that's going to remain the case for a while. So they're set. Mm-hmm. And no one would argue that Dallas doesn't appear to have a lasting step forward.
Yeah. Raiders, and we have a really good Raiders question coming up next. I'm actually going to bump it up to next in this, but I think we both like the Raiders.
Yeah, no, we can be quick on them too. They've got a young quarterback. They too have a well put together offensive line. It's a little bit older than Dallas's, but I would imagine that's another, and it's a pretty young defense still too. They're in a good spot as well, and they just locked up their coach for 4 years, which is extremely refreshing to hear from the Raiders mm-hmm. finally.
Absolutely. The Dolphins, and I would boil the Dolphins question down to this, because I think we both would be a little bit a little bit wary of the Dolphins in 20 what season is coming up? 2017 season. You know, Adam Gase did a great job this year, but everyone sort of had a full year to see what the Adam Gase Dolphins are, as far as, you know, a heavy dose of Jay Ajayi. You know, Jay Ajayi was a guy who was a healthy scratch early in the season, and then he had pretty much carrying this offense through most of the year. You know, once everyone is sort of prepared for what the Dolphins are, do you think they slide back at all? Significantly, I should say.
They might. They have some issues to correct, which makes Gase's coaching job all the more impressive. Is Ajayi the guy, first of all? He had great numbers, but they were inflated at times. He had some great, great games. But he tailed off statistically as the season progressed, and I think even on film a little bit. So what do you have in him truly is the first question. Where are you with your quarterback situation? That has not solved itself yet. That's a big one. They need a tight end, and that's an offense that uses its tight end a lot, especially by the way they design it. My favorite stat on the season, Gase's favorite formation is a 3-by-1 set with all three wide receivers to one side and the tight end off alone by himself on the other. And he can be lined up next to the offensive tackle like he usually is, or detached wide. Whatever it is, the tight end's all by himself on the weak side. They did that 170 times this season. Which is more than 10 times a game. They threw to the tight end a total of 10 times, which is a staggering unbalance there. And they don't have a tight end is what I'm getting at. And Gase would really benefit from getting one. That's an important position to have. Mm-hmm. Linebacker is another position that they have a lot of questions at. So the Dolphins have glaring weaknesses at this point that need corrected. So I guess to answer our what's the gentleman's name who sent the question in?
Mike.
To answer Mike's question, Miami's one that has not yet taken the lasting step forward.
All right. How about the Giants? Giants are interesting here in that their defense took this huge step up. Their offense kind of continues to sort of, I don't know, run in place here.
They have young wide receivers, talented ones. No one thinks there's no sign that Eli Manning's slowing down. He's still in his prime. And their running game is not going to be worse than it just was, and their offensive line to a certain degree as well, which would imply that they can only get better on offense. That doesn't work that way, but if we're just guessing at this, or if we're just looking at the landscape, they should be getting better on offense. So it's a question now of what do we feel about their defense. I like their defense. I like the free agent acquisitions have worked out. Those guys are in their prime. That's why they were so expensive. They have a young corner in Eli Apple, who's going to be better and better. I think they're in a pretty good spot. I don't know if they're a Super Bowl contender on paper right now, but between now and whatever happens up to August when the season kind of gets rolling, they could make enough change. They don't have a lot of changes to make. They could tip themselves over in that direction. How do you see them, though?
I am terrified of this offense. I think they need to change something up offensively. I think it's not working with what they have. I mean, obviously one solution could be adding significantly more talent to the receiving core. And I think outside of Odell Beckham, they have a nice piece in Sterling Shepard, and I think that's just about it. So,
yeah,
you know, how much
yeah.
better can you get?
Yeah, that's fair. And they're not good at tight end either. And so they need a tight end, and maybe a little more depth. Well, not they definitely need more depth at wide receiver. Victor Cruz is not where he was prior to his knee injuries. He did not have a great season.
No,
he did not look the same on film. So, yeah, I'm with you on that. I'm with you. They need to improve the offense. And the offense really, maybe I downplayed it in my answer initially, because the offense really wound up being what cost them, too. So they might have more steps than I led people to believe here a second ago.
Yeah. The Titans is the last big improvement team here. What do we think of Tennessee? I thought they were a nice surprise, especially on the offensive side of the ball, where everyone sort of pointed and laughed at Exotic Smash Mouth all summer.
And it got better. Yes, they did. And that Smash Mouth running game got better as the season wore on. Their passing game got more expansive conceptually. That was probably, if you factor in the way they approached the game and how teams approach the game, that tells you how coaches really feel about their players or personnel. The way they approached the game, they were the most improved offense over the course of the season in 2016. And Marcus Mariota never really was super consistent. So let's assume he can – it's a kind of a big assumption. It's not an easy one. But let's say he can become a more consistent QB. I like the skill set that he has. I like the talent. That offense has a chance to be something outstanding. They were like top five in scoring late in the season. So then the defense has to get better. They have severe issues at cornerback, and that's a position you have to get wrapped up ASAP, because especially with the way Dick LeBeau's playing now, he continues to be very aggressive with his blitz designs, or at least very creative. They rush five a lot. They don't rush six so much, but they'll rush five and they'll do stunts and twists and all that stuff off of that five-man rush. But he played man coverage behind that a lot more this year, and he's always been a zone cover defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
So he's relying on his corners, and they don't have corners right now. But if they can get that, that's really the only issue they need to get resolved.
I was gonna say they have the number five pick from the Rams. It is a draft rich in many things, and cornerbacks among them. So they'll have a chance to at least get a couple of promising young developmental guys in there. The two teams that Mike brings up here, and they're both very interesting cases here. We'll start with the Panthers, who I feel like you shore up pass protection for Cam Newton, and you kind of can, you know, assuming Luke Kuechly's healthy and maybe the front four plays a little bit better, you probably have a pretty good team again.
I think we need to have, and maybe not today, but just let's plant the seed for a longer podcast discussion moving forward later. Cam Newton has to be evaluated closer, because he was not good this season, and some of the mechanical issues that have plagued him throughout his career, minus his 2015 MVP season where everything suddenly got sharp, those resurfaced and were very costly at times. And some of the issues he's having should not be happening to any QB, let alone an immensely talented one, at what now is the middle of his career. He's not a young developing quarterback anymore.
Yeah.
He kind of is what he is now, and you're hoping he can change just enough, but it's unlikely at this point if it didn't stick after 2015. So Cam Newton wasn't great. Lack of discipline in some of his approach. And you can talk about protection for him all you want, but the protection this year was no worse than it was in the Super Bowl season. Just the quarterback didn't play the same way.
I mean,
it was maybe a little worse. Maybe that's an exaggeration. But the
I think
point,
it was
the
a little
bigger
worse.
Point is Cam Newton's the guy you have to worry about there. It's not everyone else.
I think they were a little worse, and I think their run game was a little worse. And I think you addressed this earlier this season. You thought it was kind of a play calling philosophical type of thing as far as a run game went.
Well, coaches are going to play the group of players that they feel give them the best chance to do the most things and gain the most yards. And with Kelvin Benjamin back, Mike Shula felt that he had wide receiver depth well enough that he's going to play three wide receivers. And the problem with that is last year they played two tight ends instead. So two tight ends, two wide receivers. This year was three wide receivers, one tight end. They still played a lot of two tight end, but they decreased significantly from what they played last year. And when you do that, you change what the defense can do. You change the looks that you get from the defense, because now they're playing different players. they're doing different coverages and mm-hmm. blitz concepts against your multi-receiver sets. You get when you get a defense in nickel, which is what you get when you go three wide, that's where a lot of the blitz designs are built in. The teams don't build blitzes into their base personnel. They build them into their nickel packages and their dime packages. So Carolina's not good against the blitz. Newton's numbers were awful against the blitz this season. It got exposed late in 2015, and it carried over this year. And the problem was Carolina was playing personnel packages that gave teams more opportunities to blitz. So you have to figure out what is it that you are. When you take a second tight end off the field, now you're less incentivized to run the ball. They ran the ball more out of three wide than out of two tight end or two back sets. They were great in 2015 being an old school base personnel offense with a multi-dimensional rushing attack. That's what they need to be. They need to build Cam Newton's value in the NFL, and it might shorten his career, but if you're not going to be contending for Super Bowls otherwise, then what's the point? His value's as a runner, first and foremost. Runner first, passer mm-hmm. second, and the threat yep. he poses as a runner. And I think they need to get back to that. And Ron Rivera said this week, our quarterback cannot be our leading rusher. That's correct. But your quarterback needs to be a key cog in everything you do in the run game, whether it's just presenting the threat of Newton.
Yep. The other team here is the Cardinals. And you know, probably like around Halloween last year, I would have said, you know, Cardinals just can't catch a break. You know, the missed field goals, the blocked field goals, special teams mistakes type of thing. By the end of the season, I was kind of like, you know, they're just not good. They just took a major step back this year.
And we've looked at their offense a lot, and I don't know what will come of the offense. A lot of it's going to depend on Carson Palmer. What do we make of his last season? Is he getting old or not? Mm-hmm. But I think the issue before that's his offensive line, and they were so bad at times that it was not reasonable to ask Palmer to function at a high level. He had no chance. So they had some really awful games, but then. Their defense was better last year than it was the year before, and I know the Cardinals coaches certainly feel that way. What no one's talking about is all the guys they have to deal with on that defense. They have a lot of free agents now. Calais Campbell's a free agent.
Yep.
Chandler Jones. C.O. Moore, who kind of came on for them, and that wouldn't be as big a deal at linebacker, except that Kevin Minter is also a free agent at mm-hmm. linebacker. Tony Jefferson, who's one of the best safeties in the NFL that nobody knows about and very valuable in their scheme and their blitzing scheme and their disguise scheme. He's a free agent. They still don't have a number two corner they can trust. DJ Swearinger, their other safety who played down the stretch, he's unsigned. So this defense is about to get a major makeover, barring some incredible creative work by Steve Keim in that front office. And so to evaluate the Cardinals now is almost fruitless because we don't know what this team is. They're going to have a new identity next season.
Yeah. Yeah. That's going to be – boy. Again, you know, we talked about it a little bit on the Monday show. And by the way, I heard from a lot of Patriots fans who weren't happy with how disappointed I was and, you know, and sort of bummed out I was by the Falcons' loss. Patriots were great, and you know, they were – that's the thing. They had very little margin for error, and they executed everything, and that's how they beat the Falcons. But we talked about with the Falcons how it's so hard to get back, and you see with a team like the Cardinals, they were so close, and now, I mean, they're so far away again.
They are. The one difference is Atlanta has so many young guys that they've got multiple years left on that defensive contract, those defensive contracts. And I think the other difference with Atlanta and Carolina, and the Cam Newton fans are going to hate this, but Atlanta has a stable pocket passing QB, and that leads itself to offensive stability much better than a guy like Newton, who's not a stable QB in the pocket. He can be great in the pocket, but you don't know what he's going to be from down to down. He's much less consistent than Matt Ryan when it comes to the basics of pro quarterbacking from a passing standpoint. So I would think Atlanta's in a better position to navigate things. Atlanta should be, take the emotional side out of it, Atlanta on paper should be a better team next season than they were this season.
Yeah. No.
Doesn't mean it'll go that way, of course.
Exactly. Exactly. This next one is coming Paolo from Facebook here. And Paolo, I'm going to tweak your wording just a little bit. And I'm going to pose this as a trivia question to you, Andy. Do you know where the Oakland Raiders ranked in sacks this year as a team?
It was near the bottom, I know, which I remember surprised me when I looked. I spend the end of the season, I'll go and check the stats then just to kind of know it. And I double-checked Oakland stats, sacks.
It was the bottom. They were 32nd in sacks, which is stunning considering you have Khalil Mack and you got a pretty good year out of Bruce Irvin. And yeah, that's shocking. 25 sacks this year. That was last in the league. So Paolo asks, what can they do to improve the pass rush? Is it as simple as getting Aldon Smith back from suspension and Mario Edwards Jr. healthy, or do they need to address this? I'd start. I'll hand it over to you, Andy. But I'll make the point. A lot of sacks come because of coverage, and you know, I feel like a lot of dynamic pass rushers lead to the strip sacks, the kind of things that catch a quarterback off guard, where you get there earlier than the quarterback expects. A lot of sacks are just no one was open. It ends in a sack, and I think the Raiders don't get many of those. But I'm just kind of basing that on the fact that their defensive backs just didn't have a particularly good year this year.
No, I think that's a fair assessment, and they don't have a lot of interior pass rushers in Oakland, and they're not a big blitzing defense, which means you know who you have to block, the two guys on the edge and specifically the defensive player on the edge. And my guess, by the way, someone look this up and tweet us, has a pass rusher ever won defensive player of the year while playing on the defense that was dead last in total sacks? I bet you that's never come close to happening. So they really have only two guys to deal with. And if Aldon Smith comes back, that doesn't change things a whole lot, other than maybe they'll blitz a little more and use one of those three. Now you have Aldon Smith, Khalil Mack, Bruce Irvin. You blitz, and one of those guys is rushing up the middle or something if you have all three on the field together. But that's not going to overhaul their identity defensively. So you don't get pressure up the middle, and you're not a big blitzing defense. Not only now are you limited in where your sacks and your pass rush come from, but the offense knows you're limited, and they can cater their pass protections accordingly. So the Raiders were, just as a pass rush, I think the defense was a decent-looking defense with an upward trajectory, but they were schematically, they were a little easy to handle in pass protection this year. And that's something that can change, too. Del Real's a good blitz designer. We forget that about him because I think he prefers to play straight up and emphasize fundamentals. But he takes pride in what he can do schematically with his blitzes. I know that for certain. And if they want to go that route, they have a chance to go that route. But what you said, Gary, yes, you need the secondary to be better if you're going to be a blitzing defense.
Yeah. Yeah, and to pad some of those stats as well. Our next one's coming, John Bradley via Facebook. Is there any hope for the Saints defense in 2017? They might finally have some cap space. Is there anyone specifically they should target in free agency?
Well, they've been able to get some free agents even when they didn't have cap space.
Yeah.
Remember the Jarius Byrd signing a few years ago?
Yeah, and they were in on Josh Norman last year.
Yeah, so they've figured out a way to kick the can down the road, and that road is like an interstate highway. Just doesn't seem to be ending anytime soon.
Yeah.
They could use help at any position. They don't have any edge rushers. I know people love Cameron Jordan. He's a great player, but I think he'd be better at defensive tackle and passing situations if you had some speed edge guys outside of him. Linebacker Craig Robertson had a very nice season for him. He was the only stable piece. When Donnell Ellerbe was in the lineup, though, he was it did look like a different defense. It was a faster unit overall. And then let's not forget, they had injuries at cornerback. And anytime you have injuries concentrated at the cornerback position, you're going to get exposed defensively. Delvin Bro will be back. Let's assume he's healthy. P.J. Williams, their third-round pick in 2015, is kind of a mystery. But those are guys that weren't there before, that, and Damian Swan didn't play a lot. They've got a chance to play now. So I would think they'll still want to go get a corner, but some of the guys they have coming back will help. They could use what do you think of Bird? I think Bird's a guy that needs replacing, but I don't know if they see him that way there. I think they're okay with him.
I don't really know what they I mean, it seems like he doesn't bring a big physical presence to the middle of the field.
No, he does not.
And, you know, he's, I don't know what you do with it. He's just not sort of a guy you stick back there in center field and hope he's going to do some things, you know, good enough instincts, good enough range, which he just hasn't really shown the last couple of years. Maybe it's been the injuries. Maybe it's been a confidence thing at this point. But, I don't know. I wouldn't feel good about putting him in my starting lineup right now, no matter what team I was.
Well, they played big nickel all season long. So that's enough. We talked at the top of this show about how the defense is evolving and it's the safety position doing it. They have two evolutionary safeties in their lineup, Kenny Vaccaro, and then this the past season, their second-round rookie, Von Bell, who I thought had a very nice opening season to his career. Mm-hmm. So they have that. They have Dennis Allen, a creative designer of defense. I think if they can get the cornerback thing figured out and maybe add just one pass rusher, that's not going to be enough to make them who they want to be ultimately, but that could really push them, and that could be a very good next step, a very good big first step towards recovery here, which they've needed to do for 2 years now, because they can do so many different things with their safeties. They can be more expansive than they really are. So they might be closer than it seems, but if they don't change anything, if they just go back with these guys, they're not going to compete in the NFC South.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, and you know, it, we're going to, I'm going to make us do a show at some point during the offseason where we sort of talk about building through the draft versus building through free agency. Not that anyone exclusively builds through free agency, but there are some teams, you know, like the Giants, they hit on their free agent signings. This was a case.
Look at Atlanta with Alex Mack.
Yep. I mean, Jarris Byrd was, hey, Saints fans were excited, and they should have been. The Saints should have been excited to bring him in, and it hasn't worked out. So it's kind of like how do you do it right? How do you do it wrong? I don't know if we'll have answers, but we'll talk about it. We'll talk it out and see if we can come up with an answer. Next question comes from Brian from Tampa via TalkBack. Seems like there's two distinct groups of teams looking for quarterbacks in free agency and the draft. The bad ones, Jets, Browns, and Bears, and the ones that might be a quarterback away, Broncos, Texans, Bills. What would be a good landing spot for Mike Glennon? And I guess that asks the question first. Andy, what do you think of Mike Glennon?
I liked him a few years ago. I don't know if I see him as a franchise QB. He got better throwing the ball with bodies in his face. And I think that's always an important indicator for what kind of quarterback you have. You have to be able to do that in the NFL. The game takes place in the middle of the field so much. Pockets don't last. You have to be willing to throw with bodies around you. And I thought he improved in that sense. He hasn't had the opportunities in the last few years, though, and the quarterback position is such a vital one, and there is just, it's understaffed. There aren't enough good QBs to fill the NFL that you'd think someone would have given him the opportunity by now, and he hasn't. So you wonder what is that all about? I don't think Glennon is, there are a few guys ahead of him in the order, pecking order for available QBs who might be our starters this year. There's probably 2-3 guys potentially out there ahead of him. So Glennon's someone you fall back and settle on. I don't know if he'll become a starter this season. If someone wanted to try, like if Cleveland, for example, couldn't get anywhere at quarterback for whatever reason, and they just had the guys they have now, Robert Griffin, Cody Kessler, Hogan, then I would think bringing in Glennon, that would be an upgrade for that team. So he's good enough to play for some teams, but he's not a guy you go out and hunt for.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, the Texans couldn't fit him in with the Osweiler contract situation right now, and I don't know if the Houston Texans fan base has the appetite for another tall, you know, backup quarterback coming in. But it, you know, if it was the Texans or if the Broncos could fit him in, I mean,
don't need that. The Broncos have a tall backup QB named Paxton Lynch. That's the guy they're going to be developing.
All right. How about the Bills? If they move on from Tyrod.
Yeah, that would be, I think even Glennon over Tyrod now would be an upgrade for them. Glennon, the style of play matters, and Glennon is a pocket QB, so you can do a lot more stylistically with a pocket QB than you can with a guy who needs to be hidden out of the pocket, and that Tyrod's one of those guys. So I think Glennon would be an upgrade now, Tyrod or no Tyrod in Buffalo, and I don't think Tyrod Taylor's going to be there either.
Yeah. Well, that's actually the next question here. Transitions nicely. Allison Harder via Facebook. If the Bills decide not to keep Tyrod Taylor, how much will that impact their run game?
That's a good question. That is where he's valuable, because it's the threat he poses in the running game. They don't use him as a threat the way that Seattle uses Russell Wilson or especially the way Carolina uses Cam Newton, where it's a lot of read option wrinkles within the play designs, but there's still an element of that. And even if you're not doing straight read option, where you're forcing the defense to use one defender to account for the QB, you can still impact the defense with the potential of backside quarterback keepers, play action bootlegs. A mobile quarterback impacts the backside of a run defense very well, and Buffalo's benefited from that. So there is some value there. Just watch the film, though. It's not enough to offset the limitations that Taylor presents to their passing game. And part of the reason they run so much is because they don't feel comfortable passing. But if they lose him, and they're going to lose him, then that will impact the running game will take a step back, and they're going to have to execute better because they're not going to have as many schematic options available to them.
All right, next question comes Ito via Twitter. Will Andy use this offseason to watch film on Slash and then answer questions from Gary about it? Have you seen? So after we had that conversation, and if you missed the show a couple weeks ago, Andy, what, you didn't know Slash until like 2006 or something?
Yes.
Did I sum it up?
It was Michael Jordan's last NBA season. So it was before that even. It's like 2004, I want to say. We were in Los Angeles on a family trip. We went to Jimmy Kimmel as one of our activities for the night. Don't do that when you're in seventh grade with your parents. You're just going to feel self-conscious the whole time. And the guy that was on Jimmy Kimmel that was like there for the week, he used to have a week-long co-host guest guy. It was some dude named Slash who everybody seemed to believe was extremely good at the guitar, and that's all I know about him, and that's what I saw of him. So I watched him play and warm up and all that stuff, and it was a real treat, I was told, and that's all I know.
I can't believe how disrespectful you are of Slash. I immediately listened to Appetite Destruction like seven consecutive times just to confirm how unbelievable that is. And I think you should go back and do that. Not just the videos, listen to the whole album because it's exceptional. There's no filler on that album. It is face melting rock throughout.
I wouldn't know what I'm listening to though. Like I would sit there. Like I remember in college, I had to pick a music class. My sister was a musical prodigy. Like Cleveland Institute wanted her, and she was great at it. And I told my parents, I just picked one. I picked music theory, which I guess is like this coach's film of music, scheming music. And they laughed, and Katie said, my mom said, oh, Andy, I think you'll struggle in that class. And Katie said, he's not going to struggle. He plain won't be able to do it. Nothing will happen. He'll just sit there. He won't be able to act on anything. Nothing will occur. That's where I am with music. So if I were to sit and watch Slash, it's a seven-minute video, I'm just sitting and watching. I'm sitting and staring for 7 minutes.
Listen to Appetite for Destruction. And just take it in. I mean, it appeals. Everyone in the world loves that album.
Wait, oh, so it's a whole album? It's not a single song?
No. Oh, God,
I'm not doing
no.
that then. I'm not doing no. that. I'm not doing that. I'm not going to sit through an entire album.
I will
just
meet
take
you
it in? Take it into what?
Andy, I will meet you halfway. There are 12 tracks on the album. You can skip Think About You. You have to listen to the other 11, though.
Or else what?
Fine. Adolfo Birch will be in touch.
What will happen is I'll listen, and then I'll come back and say, "Yeah, I listened," and that's all I'll be able to say to it. You'll accuse me of being disrespectful. I don't know music. I'm no good at it. I listen to country.
It's not.
I listen to like that crap that NASA comes up with these days, where it's all the same sounding song. I'm one of those guys.
Oof. It's not the kind of thing where it's like, listen to this classical music and, you know, pick up on this. Just listen. It's unbelievably enjoyable music to listen to.
I'll give it one song. Pick a song.
It's not a song. It's an album.
I know. And you're going to pick a song from that album. I'm not going to listen to the whole album. Unless the song's great. So pick a song and then pick a backup song in case I do like the first one and I'll give a second one a chance. It's nothing about Slash. This is all about me. I don't know this stuff.
At least we've established that. Next question from James Stafford via Facebook. What was Bill What was Bill Belichick wearing during the Super Bowl? Looked like an inside-out jacket slash hoodie. We looked at this before the show, and we have no idea. It looked like he went to, you know, maybe he stopped at like the Houston Costco on the way to the stadium and just said, "Do you have a plain blue windbreaker that I can cut through easily? I'm going to cut the sleeves off of it, and that's what I'm going to wear to the Super Bowl." Because that's what shocked me. There was no Patriots logo on it. It was just plain blue.
I did not notice that until it was pointed out to us. I can't answer that one. That's an interesting one. Because I think he's supposed to wear, especially for the Super Bowl, I think he's supposed to wear something.
Yeah.
Something NFL apparel.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you remember when Mike Nolan used to wear the suits. Yep. Back in the mid-2000s when he coached 49ers. And the deal was that the league said you can wear a suit, but it has to be a Reebok suit.
To which everyone said, Reebok suits?
That's how serious they were about the branding. I don't know if they where they put the logo on it, but Reebok had to design it, I think was at least. I don't know if they necessarily manufactured it, but Reebok had to have their hands. This was back when the league was Reebok, not Nike. So Reebok had to have their hands in designing the suit, which is... I mean, that's how serious they take their sideline apparel. I think we should check NFL Shop and see if they are selling just plain blue windbreakers now. The new Bill Belichick look. Maybe it's not the hoodie anymore. And if you want to, look, you should be reading MMQB stuff all the time. But Dan Wetzel did a really good piece on Bill Belichick and the whole apparel thing back in 2015. Dan Wetzel over at Yahoo Sports. So if you want to know more about that, that's a place to go. Last
quickly,
question
what
here, Andy.
What percentage of likelihood? Yeah, okay. Well, I got a quick question for you on this topic. What percentage of likelihood do you think it is that Bill Belichick at this point now remembers what he wore at the Super Bowl?
It feels like, I'll just say this. It feels like it was a choice. It was an active, conscious choice to wear something that was not. That didn't say Patriots or even have the look that it wasn't even like a little logo on the collar or something. That seems premeditated. I think you got to talk about maybe stripping them of the Super Bowl.
So you think he does
sideline apparel?
You think he does remember doing that?
I think he does remember.
So you
doing
think
it.
He remembers it then?
Yeah, yeah. It might have been a little bit of a statement, and now we get to. You know, as long as we're going to make up controversies, let's get this one going. We got an offseason to fill, so there you go. Last question.
Yep, no, I'm with you. Apparelgate. There we go.
There you go. It kind of fits because it's like the scandals, if that's what you want to call, they got sort of increasingly more absurd as we went. So this is a good third step here. I don't know what the next one would be. Maybe some sort of thought crime, but I think we're on a good schedule right here. But the last question, and this sort of wraps it up. This is coming from Chad Gibbons via Facebook. What 2016/17 predictions were you most right about? Which one would you like a mulligan for? I have one. I have two big ones. We said early in the year we thought the at least you were a coward and skipped out on the preseason prediction show. I ended up doing it with Albert Breer instead, but we had said and I think this was sort of conventional thinking. The Browns and the 49ers had no chance at the playoffs, and everyone else sort of had a chance. All other 30 teams had a chance. I thought the Falcons might have been the worst of those other 30 teams. I thought they were in that sort of 25-30 range. And that obviously was incredibly wrong, but in my defense, if Matt Ryan 2015 had shown up in 2016, I think the Falcons might have finished last in the NFC South.
I had them go in the playoffs. I was fine with Atlanta going in. People bring up my bad predictions a lot, so I guess I can go look it up. I don't remember my predictions much. Maybe that's bad, and I'm not supposed to say that. That doesn't mean I mailed them in. And that show that I was a coward about, I was on vacation. I was out of the country, Gary.
Vacation like a coward. You left the country. Dodge the whole thing.
I make the prediction and then I move forward. I really don't think about it because you're going to get some right. You're going to get some wrong. I just try to say what the most football intelligent is to get the conversation going that way. So I don't know what predictions I'm sure I blew a lot of them. I remember 2 years ago I had Baltimore winning the Super Bowl and they won like four or five games.
Yeah.
But I don't remember. I don't. This year I had Green Bay and Pittsburgh in the Super Bowl, which I changed going into the playoffs to Atlanta and New England. So I covered all my bases there. I felt very good about that. I don't know though. Pass on this one.
Man. Well, I'll throw another. I also said the Bears were going
it's
to.
It's a good
the,
question.
The
I just
playoffs.
Don't have an answer.
It is. No. I said the Bears were going to the playoffs. That obviously they ended up being. They finished 30th. They were the worst non-Browns / 49ers team in the league this year. I'll throw
That's
one
right.
more
I
out there for
that
you,
about
Andy.
The Bears now. Yeah.
I know. I'll throw one more out there for you. In 2014, you were very high on the Bucks going into the year, and so was Peter. And the other senior editor and I, Matt Gagne at the MMQB, we decided, I noticed, hey, look, the Bucks are 100-1 to win the Super Bowl. And 100-1 is like what the Browns were this year. Like 100-1 is, that's like the 32nd ranked team in the league is 100-1 to win the Super Bowl. So we were like, you know, we should put down $100 on the Bucks to win the Super Bowl. Just for fun, we're not big time gamblers.
I know, and then
they finished last. They finished their second. Vegas was right.
Yeah, and you joined the hordes of people. You joined the hordes of people that kept reminding me about it all season long. They would just send me Twitter pictures of my prediction page in the magazine.
We were the hordes of people. We were just going in under pseudonyms. That's how upset we were over each losing $50.
Different names. Yeah.
Yes. Andy, yeah. That's
I don't like predictions. I don't like predictions. You say you can say 10 intelligent things in an article, sum it up with a prediction, and the prediction's the only thing people remember, and it's 50-50 if you're going to get it right.
It's fair enough. That's the life. Just like with the Falcons, you can play a great Super Bowl and screw up one quarter of it, and you know, three individual plays go wrong, and now you're not Super Bowl champs. It's a metaphor. We're kind of like,
okay.
You know.
Kind of. All right. That's fine. It's all right. That's all right. It's an 8-8 metaphor.
It's a terrible metaphor. And that's why we're going to wrap up this show right now. This was the reintroduction of the mailbag to the Monday show. Send those questions in ggrambling_si or andy_benoit. We're both on Facebook. Hey, Facebook questions are great. Write as long as you want. Or talkback@themmqb.com. We will do this every Monday. We're going to have other stuff to talk about, but we'll fit in a mailbag segment. We're going to have lots coming up. Free agency, draft stuff. More coaching staff shaking out here. So we'll have lots to talk about in the next couple of weeks. That'll do it for now. Thank you to our producer, Matt Havia, and editor, Chris Basil, as well as all the folks over at Digital Media who support us. And thank you very much to our new sponsor, Casper Mattress. Once again, get $50 off any mattress purchase by going to casper.com/MMQB. Use that promo code MMQB. Hey, look, without the Casper guys, they wouldn't let us do this show. So thank you very much to them. Support them the way they support us. Thank you, listeners, for sending all the mail and for listening to this episode of the MMQB 10 Things podcast. Honestly, you guys are the best. Keep the questions coming all off season. We're going to be, regular schedule every Monday. It's going to be a really good off season. Lots of fascinating stuff going down here. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer, the MMQB podcast with Peter King, and this podcast, the MMQB 10 Things podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys next week.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.